Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 306, titled Another Look at Global Fascism. We began by taking a look at fascist connections with various Middle Eastern nationalist movements, including some virulent propaganda currently finding its way into the Arabic press, very reminiscent of some of the most right propaganda coming out of the Goebbels propaganda ministry in World War II. We've then been traveling around the globe looking at links between Middle Eastern fascism and fascism in Europe, both older fascist movements and neo-fascist movements. And we concluded, side one, by taking a look at some interesting links between the world of contemporary fascism and what used to be Yugoslavia, including the most recent article, a UPI story which examined the arrest of a German mercenary for a car bomb attack perpetrated on behalf of ethnic Albanians that killed some Serb policemen and officials. And we're going to, in this side, we're going to stay in the continent of Europe, and we're going to be taking a look at European fascism and various European fascist movements with roots going back to World War II. By the way, as I've noted in the past, Italian fascism, and time permitting, we're going to get to some of the interesting elements of the Silvio Berlusconi coalition in Italy. We're going to be, in connection with Italian fascism, it's worth noting that there is very strong and virulent sympathy for some of the most anti-Semitic and anti-Zionist elements in the Middle East, and at the same time, some elements of the Israeli right, which itself has a fascist heritage, have some operational links with elements of Italian neo-fascism. We've talked about that in a number of broadcasts dealing with global fascism and with Euro-fascism. One of the elements that we've discussed in connection not only with the Reinhard Gehlen Nazi spy outfit that began with the Third Reich and then jumped to U.S. intelligence during World War II, but also in conjunction with the, we've spoken about this organization in connection with the Gehlen organization, also in connection with the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, and also in conjunction with the assassination of President Kennedy, and that is the OUNB, which is a Ukrainian nationalist and fascist organization headed up by Stefan Bandera, which had strong links to the Third Reich and also to elements of Western intelligence and elements of the OUNB milieu and the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations run through the assassination of President Kennedy. And again, these are elements which are, although Bandera himself has been dead for many years, the fascist heritage of Ukrainian nationalism is very much present. I don't want to be misunderstood as suggesting that all or even most Ukrainian nationalists are fascists, but there are very strong historical and political links, and those links are very much in evidence today. The current government of the Ukraine under Leonid Kuchma, the president, appears to be less than wholly democratic. However, I would note that the milieu that protests against Leonid Kuchma, justifiably, I would say, at least as near as one can tell from reading the English language press in this country, the elements protesting against President Kuchma are themselves less than wholly democratic, and apparently some of the Ukrainian fascist heritage of the Ukrainian nationalist movement is very much present in the protest movement against President Kuchma. We're going to read now from the San Francisco Chronicle of Saturday, March 24th of the year 2001. This is an article by Julia Barton. It's datelined Kiev in the Ukraine. It's headlined, Ukraine's Embattled Democracy, subtitled, Unpopular Leader Steps Up Pressure Against Political Foes. And the article reads in part as follows, skipping down. Ukraine's eastern and southern regions were under Russian and then Soviet control for more than 300 years, and nostalgia for the former Soviet Union remains strong. Western Ukraine, much of which was forcibly annexed by the Soviet Union during World War II, retains a strong nationalistic and anti-communist streak. The divisions run so deep that Ukrainians actually fought on both sides during the war. While Kiev and eastern Ukraine still celebrate the Red Army's victory over Nazi forces on May 9th, in parts of anti-communist western Ukraine, it's a day of mourning. Skipping down, speaking of the protesters against Kuchma, about a quarter of the jailed protesters were members of the right-wing nationalist organization UNA-UNSO, which has strong roots in western Ukraine. The group first gained notoriety in the mid-1990s when it sent paramilitary troops to Chechnya to fight the Russian army. Although UNA-UNSO's leaders say they now eschew fascism, the organization's website contains a letter of support for far-right Austrian politician Jörg Haider, and UNA-UNSO members still spout the rhetoric of aggrieved nationalism. Quote, "The Ukrainian people are in the background of Ukraine," unquote, said one member, Nadia Maya, at a recent protest in Lviv. Again quoting, "In front are the Russians, Poles, and Jews. Ukrainians work for them, or they have to go abroad to earn a living, and there they have other masters," unquote, she said. The presence of groups like UNA, UNSO, and the protest movement has been a boon to Kuchma, who has exploited their extremist past to tarnish all of his opponents. In a speech on national television on February 13th, he warned of, quote, "professional revolutionaries," unquote, seeking to destabilize the country. So note again the UNA-UNSO affinity for Jörg Haider, an affinity that is shared by various elements. It is in Haider's Carinthia province that the Iraqi arms dealer Jabara holds forth, apparently serving as a conduit between European far-right and fascist elements and the Iraqi regime. And Jörg Haider, as I've mentioned in numerous broadcasts about Eurofascism, is also very close to the Liga Norda, part of the successful coalition put together by Silvio Berlusconi, a former member of the P2 Lodge. We may get to the Berlusconi victory later in this broadcast. We will certainly be covering the Berlusconi election and the coalition he has put together in future broadcasts that will be coming up soon. There's a very interesting, in discussing, by the way, the OUNB and the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, we've discussed both of those organizations in conjunction with the destabilization of the former Soviet Union, and in turn we've talked about the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations and the milieu surrounding that in connection with the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization. That is a very important, although largely unrecognized, wing of the Republican Party that is literally sort of an outgrowth of European fascism and the Third Reich in particular, and it has its roots firmly mired in the politics and the ideology of the Third Reich. We've dealt with the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization in numerous broadcasts, and those are available from Spitfire. There was something of an echo of the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization and also the efforts on the part of the Republican Party in the late 80s and early 90s to reach out to and form alliances with extreme nationalist and ultra-rightist movements, some of them explicitly fascist, in the newly liberated parts of Eastern Europe. I've also noted in the past, in connection with the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, that one of the organizations that was very much involved with that was the Arrow Cross organization. That was the fascist organization in Hungary during World War II, Hungary being an ally of Nazi Germany during the Second World War. I've also noted, in connection with other broadcasts about the reemergence of fascism in Europe, that Hungary has been one of the countries where European neo-fascism has made itself felt, and now apparently some of those neo-fascist and anti-Semitic elements in Hungary are becoming, or at least are aiming in the direction of becoming part of a major governmental coalition. We're going to read now from the San Francisco Chronicle of Saturday, May 5th of the year 2001. This is an article by Sam Loewenberg of the Chronicle Foreign Service. It's datelined Budapest, Hungary, and its headline, "Hungary's Ruling Party Courting Extreme Right-Wing Faction," subtitled, "Goal is to Isolate Socialist Opponents in 2002 Election." The article reads as follows. Hungary's ruling party ascended to power in 1998 by learning from and adopting the sophisticated methods of U.S. political parties, tailoring its platform to the Poles and co-opting the policies of its rivals. But the strategy has recently taken a dangerous twist, with the ruling Federation of Young Democrats, Hungarian Civic Party, increasingly embracing an extreme right party that espouses nationalism and anti-Semitism. With an election scheduled for 2002, many observers believe that the Fidesz is seeking to turn Hungary's multi-party parliamentary democracy into a two-party system by consolidating the entire right wing of the political spectrum. The goal is to isolate on the left wing the Fidesz's Socialist Party arch-rivals. The two are currently running about even in opinion polls, each favored by about one-fourth of the electorate. Recent scandals involving the Fidesz's current coalition partner, the smallholders, have led many to think that the party will try to absorb the membership of the Hungarian Truth and Life Party, or MIEP, an ultranationalist, anti-Semitic movement whose percentage of voter support, while still small, is showing signs of moving into the double digits. Hungarian newspapers have quoted Fidesz President Laszlo Kovár as saying there are many similarities between his party's beliefs and those of the MIEP, and the two parties acknowledge that they have held talks with each other. Kovár has said the two will not enter into a formal coalition because the European Union would frown on it. Hungary's admission to the EU is high on the Fidesz's priority list. A March 15th MIEP rally in Budapest drew a turnout that surprised many observers, not only for its numbers, which the Associated Press put as high as 50,000, but for its composition, a mix of old pensioners who remember Hungary's pre-communist past, young urban students and professionals, and dozens of skinheads, some of them wearing neo-Nazi insignia. The Fidesz's courting of some of Hungary's most extreme and intolerant elements is a clear case of political opportunism, said liberal commentator Miklós Harasti, who calls the Fidesz, quote, the party of marketing, unquote. Today's Fidesz bears little resemblance to the Young Democrats' beginnings in the 1980s as liberal jean-jacketed students resisting Hungary's communist rulers. Over the course of the past decade, it traded in its liberal ideals for a carefully charted rightward course that has former supporters scornfully referring to it as an unholy union of nationalists and, quote, yuppies from hell, unquote. Prime Minister Viktor Orban, in particular, is often cited by critics as a cunning pragmatist. The Young Democrats' journey to the right has been influenced by their contacts with the U.S. Republican Party. As recently as the end of last year, former Reagan and Bush administration officials were traveling to Budapest to advise Fidesz leaders on political strategy. These last two sentences again. The Young Democrats' journey to the right has been influenced by their contacts with the U.S. Republican Party. As recently as the end of last year, former Reagan and Bush administration officials were traveling to Budapest to advise Fidesz leaders on political strategy. And again, in the background of that, not only the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization, but also the Free Congress Foundation, founded by Paul Weyrich, Laszlo Pásztor, a Hungarian fascist and associate of the Arrow Cross, being one of the principal operatives both with the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization and Paul Weyrich's Free Congress Foundation, an organization deeply involved in the destabilization of the Soviet Union in Eastern Europe, and the focal point of RFA 36 and also discussed in 37. Continuing with this article, speaking of the Fidesz, after talking about their links with the with former Reagan and Bush administration officials, those leaders see opportunity in the MIEP's growing appeal, which is fostered by the economic hardship many Hungarians face after the collapse of former Soviet bloc markets. The transition to capitalism has left everyone from pensioners to middle-income families struggling after losing long-held social benefits. The inflation rate is almost 10%, and only last year did the standard of living regain 1990 levels. For the MIEP, the new boogeyman is globalization, a peculiar mix of fears of the European Union, a comeback by communists, and domination by international Jewish capital. Those sentiments are an obstacle to cooperation with the Fidesz. They and the socialists desperately want Hungary to be admitted to the EU as soon as possible. Nonetheless, the Fidesz, and turning to inside, continues to edge closer to the MIEP in rhetoric. Fidesz parliamentary deputy Mihály Bala, B-A-L-L-A, declared recently, quote, in Hungary, the Christian religion is very important, unquote. He also asserted that, quote, there is no racism and no anti-Semitism there, a claim not supported by international observers. The U.S. State Department's most recent human rights report cited many cases of discrimination against Roma or gypsies, including residential and educational segregation and police brutality. Quote, the Romani minority community and dark-skinned foreigners are the most common victims of police abuse, unquote, according to the report released in February. Again quoting, societal discrimination against Roma remains a serious problem, unquote. Orban himself has made remarks that seemingly reflect such bias, criticizing Roma for trashing their own homes, and warning that their success in society depends on hard work and education, thereby implying that gypsies do not value those virtues. By the way, gypsies were among the minorities that were targeted for and to a certain extent liquidated by the Third Reich, and they remain one of the major targets of European neo-fascist movements as well. Continuing. The European Union's Human Rights Committee cited, quote, latent anti-Semitism, unquote, in elements of the Hungarian media, the government, and in society in general. The MIEP, for example, is trying to rehabilitate the image of World War II Prime Minister Laszlo Bardossi, who was executed in 1946 for his role in the deaths of hundreds of thousands of Jews. Quote, Hungary is for Hungarians, unquote, throngs of MIEP supporters chanted at the March 15th rally held in Heroes Square, one of the primary centers for Hungary's democracy movement in 1989. The key speaker was MIEP founder István Csurka, a playwright with the build of a retired wrestler who has spoken about a New York, Tel Aviv, Budapest conspiracy that threatens, quote, real Magyar interests, unquote. Csurka avoided overt anti-Semitic rhetoric at the rally, instead warning the crowd about the threat of global capital, saying it put Hungarians in the same position as Palestinians, quote, when the Jewish settlers arrived, unquote. Will be reduced to becoming stone-throwing Palestinian youths, unquote, he told his supporters. We have no problems with Jews. The only problem is their big-time money. The money goes to them, and we have nothing, unquote, said 21-year-old college student Gabor Fotanyi. Idiko Lang, L-A-N-G, a 26-year-old woman from Budapest, described another political party, the Free Democrats, as a, quote, Jewish, unquote, party. Again quoting, MIEP is against Israel and the Free Democrats, unquote, she said. Another young woman, who declined to give her name, said Hungary was being overrun by foreigners, quote, in Hungary, I don't feel myself to be Hungarian, unquote. Given Hungary's long history of anti-Semitism and nationalism, for Fidesz leaders not to openly condemn the MIEP's rhetoric is nearly the same as endorsing it, said a Hungarian political analyst. What Fidesz leaders say, quote, doesn't matter as much as what they don't say, unquote, he said. Again quoting, it gives voice to the prejudice of the people that has been here for centuries and centuries, unquote. Notice that there's no direct reference, there's only one reference in that article to Hungary's fascist heritage in World War II. And again, note some of the similarities between European neo-fascist movements and also fascist movements in the United States, and their sympathy for the Palestinian cause, really at root simply anti-Semitism, since these groups tend to be almost as virulently anti-Arab as they are anti-Israeli. And in fact, in many European countries, France in particular, immigrants from the Middle East are viewed as one of the major threats to society and are a frequent target not only of fascist rhetoric, but of fascist violence as well. There has been an interesting development in Belgium, which is scheduled to assume the rotating presidency of the EU. Two Belgian governmental officials, Flemish officials, by the way, Belgium is composed of two main nationalist groups or ethnic groups, the Flemish and the Walloons. The Flemish have an affiliation with French heritage and the Walloons with Dutch. During World War II, France was one of a number of countries that sent volunteers to the Waffen-SS, and one of the generals in one of the Waffen-SS divisions that fought on the Eastern Front in World War II, Léon de Grelle, became a key post-war operative of the Odessa, the post-World War II SS underground. He was a strong associate, a very close associate of Otto Skorzeny, and discussed, by the way, at considerable length in RFA number 19. Recently, there have been two instances in which Flemish politicians had been found to have links, and I may be mispronouncing it, to the Sint Martins Fonds, which was founded in 1953 in order to assist Belgian volunteers who fought in the Waffen-SS on the Eastern Front in World War II. This research credit on all three of these goes to members of a listening audience. The first is from the London Independent of May 10th of the year 2001. This is an article by Stephen Castle in Brussels, datelined May 10th, 2001. It's headlined, Flemish Interior Minister Refuses to Quit Over Membership of SS Group. And again, this is by Stephen Castle. The article reads in part, Belgium's wartime past returned to haunt its politics yesterday when a minister in the Flemish regional government provoked a political furor by admitting his membership of a support group for Nazi SS veterans. The row reopens sores by highlighting the legacy of Flemish collaboration during the Second World War. It also threatened the stability of the national coalition government. The Flemish Interior Minister, Johan Sauwens, S-A-U-W-E-N-S, yesterday apologized for attending a meeting last Saturday of the Sint Maartensfonds, a support group for SS veterans of which he has been a member for 25 years. But despite massive political pressure and growing support for a vote of no confidence in the minister, Mr. Sauwens did not offer to resign. The Sint Maartensfonds was founded in 1953 to help Belgians who volunteered to join Waffen-SS units on the Russian front. After the war, collaborators were jailed or stripped of many of their rights and with little opportunity for employment. Still more about Sauwens. Research credit on this also goes to a member of the listening audience. This comes from the BBC News. This is also datelined May 10th. Of the year 2001, and this is from the BBC News website at news.bbc.co.uk. This is headlined, Flemish Minister Quits Over SS Links. It reads in part as follows, skipping down, about Mr. Sauwens's attendance at the Sint Maartensfonds rally. Photos and video footage of Saturday's meeting showed Mr. Sauwens participating in festivities of far-right sympathizers. Johan Sauwens is seen to stand up as the uniformed participants sing the anthem of the Flemish SS Brigade during World War II, including a call to arms. And Johan Sauwens is not the only Flemish government official who has been found to have links to the Sint Maartensfonds. Research credit on the following also goes to a member of the listening audience. This also is from the London Independent, and this also was authored by Stephen Castle in Brussels. This, however, is dated May 18th of the year 2001. It's headlined, Second Belgian Minister Linked to SS Veterans, and it reads in part as follows. A row over wartime collaboration threatened to claim a second political scalp and plunged the Belgian government into crisis yesterday when a cabinet minister admitted past links with a support group for SS veterans. Jacques Gabriels, J-A-A-K-G-A-B-R-I-E-L-S, Belgium's Minister of Agriculture and member of the Prime Minister's Flemish Liberal Party, faced hostile questions from the media and MPs as he sought to explain away a growing political embarrassment. Just 1 week ago, a minister in the Flemish regional government was forced to quit after being seen at a meeting of an SS veteran support group attended by followers of the far right. Skipping down. The row centers on the activities of the Sint Maartensfonds, a group set up in the early 1950s to help returning collaborators and their families. 10 days ago, the interior minister of the Flemish regional government, Johan Sauwens, was filmed at a meeting by political rivals from the far-right Vlaams Belang. The footage, shown gleefully to selected journalists, was shot from behind and revealed the Flemish minister seated at the back of a hall with Nazi symbols in silhouette. Skipping down. Having at first denied membership of the Sint Maartensfonds, the minister qualified his answer, this referring to Gabriel's, admitting contacts many years ago. Yesterday Le Soir, the Brussels Daily, reported that Mr. Gabriel's office had confirmed that the minister was a member of the group 20 years ago, but could not remember whether he remains one. I would add, parenthetically, take that lack of remembrance with a grain of salt. He said he was a member of the group 20 years ago, but couldn't remember whether he remained a member of the support group for the Flemish Waffen-SS divisions. Skipping down. That was denied by his spokeswoman, who said that Mr. Gabriels had simply bought raffle tickets sold in support of the group. Skipping down again. Mr. Sauwens represented the Volksunie Party, a nationalist Flemish group which eschews the strident nationalism of the extreme Vlaams Bloc, but has murky roots. Mr. Gabriels was a president of the Volksunie before defecting to the Liberal Party of the Prime Minister, Guy Verhofstadt. When it was founded after the war, one of the Volksunie's demands was an amnesty for collaborators. The rationale was that many Flemish people cooperated with the Germans because they saw it as a route to separatism and freedom from oppression by Belgium's French-speaking elite rather than an embracing of Nazi ideology. Some dispute that interpretation, and a book published last year highlights how much cooperation the Germans found for their Jewish extermination policy in Antwerp. Excuse me, the Walloons, I believe, the Walloons were associated with the French, and it is the Flemish that were associated with the Dutch. At least that's my understanding. Anyway, those are the two major ethnic groups in Belgium. It is the Flemish nationalist movement that had some strong ties here to the Waffen-SS, or at least those ties have emerged here. Resuming again and repeating the last couple of sentences, the rationale was that many Flemish people cooperated with the Germans because they saw it as a route to separatism and freedom from oppression by Belgium's French-speaking elite rather than an embracing of Nazi ideology. Some dispute that interpretation, and a book published last year highlights how much cooperation the Germans found for their Jewish extermination policy in Antwerp. Today, the port city is a stronghold of the far right. The row has sparked an examination of Belgium's wartime legacy and raised more questions about the strength of the modern far right. And indeed, note that two Belgian government officials have now emerged with links to the support organization for the Flemish Waffen-SS division of World War II. In several For the Record broadcasts, we've dealt with Eric Priebke, the SS officer who was convicted of participating in massacres in post-World War II, in wartime Italy. In some of those broadcasts, I've dealt with Priebke's connections to the post-World War II Odessa Underground, and also, apparently, Priebke's and associates' connections to elements of Western intelligence as well. Priebke has very strong connections to the Italian neo-fascist milieu that has emerged in once again as part of the governing coalition of Silvio Berlusconi. So as a parting shot for this broadcast and as something of a transition to the forthcoming discussion of the Berlusconi government, I offer up this article once again from L'Espresso, once again author a research for us and translated by Dave White. This article is called I Have a Nazi for a Friend. It's by Giorgio Farini, and again it's from L'Espresso of January 18th of the year 2001. Eric Priebke, the SS captain convicted in 1997 of the Adriatine massacre, now spends his time eating homemade pasta, bicycling around Rome, and receiving no more than 3 guests a day. Sometimes he stays up until 12:30 a.m. working on his computer, answering hundreds of emails and letters from his family and supporters around the world. Priebke lives under house arrest in the back of a 2-bedroom, 3rd-floor apartment in the Aurelio district on the outskirts of the Italian capital. A residence provided to him, quote, for humanitarian reasons, unquote, by wealthy Marche businessman Paolo Giacchini. French by birth, but Roman by choice, Giacchini insists his interest in Priebke is not ideological. However, it's rumored in ultra-right circles that the old Nazi is nearly finished with his autobiography, and will give some of the proceeds from the sale of the book to the Frenchman who has helped him for the past 3 years. Giacchini is in fact president of Uomo e Libertà, an association that fights for human rights. Not just any human rights, but the rights of Priebke and two former Terza Posizione terrorists, Mario Tute and Massimo Morsello. For a quarter of a century, Tute has suffered from the effects of solitary confinement. Morsello, a fugitive, recently returned to Italy because of ill health. The usually reserved Giacchini attended his homecoming party in Fiumicino. Tutti and Morsello are co-founders of the fascist party Forza Nuova, which expects to garner 2.3% of the vote in the next election. Until 1996, when the fur trade was no longer legally supported, Giacchini worked for an animal skin dealer on Via Panisperna in Rome called Sear. One business client of Sear was very nearly cost Giacchini his freedom. Fascist fugitive turned Japanese millionaire Delfo Zorzi, who for years has managed the importation of Italian footwear to Tokyo. And we're going to read this article in full in a broadcast dealing with, an upcoming For the Record broadcast dealing with, the Berlusconi government. I've made reference to other broadcasts during the course of For the Record 306. Those are available from Spitfire, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. That concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 306. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.